Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This episode of the new screensavers is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
How to capture the world in 3D, Canon's Auto Intelligent Flash, and new wireless earbuds from Anchor. Live from the Twit East Side Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new screensavers.
On our segues, we got to get you on the segue and add you to that. Add you to that video. I'm Leo Laporte. Welcome to the new screensavers for March 10th, 2018, episode 146. That is Alex Lindsay.
Had to think about that for a little while because, you know, we haven't seen each other very often.
I haven't seen you in a whole 2 weeks. Well, you weren't here for Mac Break Weekly last week.
I was. I was on Skype, though.
Oh, but you were on Skype.
See, it's not the same.
Alex is the genius of production, of internet, of streaming, of, I mean, so many great things. Creator of Mac Break and Mac Break Weekly, regular on the Mac Break Weekly show. And it's always nice to have you in studio.
It's good to be
You've
here.
Brought some. Where does he get all those amazing toys?
I have friends
toys?
With great toys. And so we brought some.
It's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get to Alex's treats, we're going to go to DP Review. Dan Bracaglia is back from. I didn't know about this. You're a photographer. CP Plus, have you heard of this show?
I've heard of it. I've never been there.
It's in Yokohama. And because it's in Japan, the big Japanese camera manufacturers really show some new stuff. A new Canon mirrorless, an update to Sony's amazing A7. We're going to find out about that, some cool accessories. That's all coming up a little later on the show.
And we're going to show you a couple different ways to capture the world in 3D, from everything from photogrammetry, just taking it with your iPhone, to the big stuff, LiDAR.
We have some very, very expensive gear in the studio for that one. Jason Howell shows us a new headphones. I like the company Anchor. They've got something called the Zolo Liberty Plus. It's the first headphone to use the new Bluetooth 5 standard. So we'll find out, is that worth looking for?
Yeah. And in Call for Help, we're going to talk about podcast production and ways to take live calls.
This is going to be a car wreck. You just stay tuned. You will see why in a little bit. Megan Maroney reviews her laptop case. Maybe you've seen it. It's made out of wood. And she'll tell you how she got it and where you can get it too.
And we're going to also answer more of your questions from the mailbag.
But first, the news of the week. And of course, the big news of the week. I don't think it's the big news of the week, but it's funny. Amazon's Echo is laughing at people.
Sorry, I don't know that one.
So, first of all, everybody knows that your Echo and your Google Home and your Harman Kardon and Evoke and whatever, you know, devices you have, your HomePod from Apple, from time to time speak spontaneously.
Right.
Right?
And if you live in a house where your name is Alex, it does it often.
You got to rename.
I know. I keep on saying, I got to rename that. And then I can't. Oh, I don't know how to rename it. I just leave it that way. I'm not. You know.
It happens to me all the time watching TV, and it's not. You know, it's not that that the actual trigger word is said, but something close enough that it fools these devices. And most of the time, they say, "I don't know what you're talking about," or "I don't know what I don't understand." But there has been a spate lately of people's Amazon Echoes laughing at them. And it's kind of a creepy-ish laugh. And I think that it's created this whole stupid techno panic where people are assuming it's, what are they thinking? Jeff Bezos is laughing at them, that it somehow has to do with surveillance. It's very simple. It's just the Echo thinking it heard. Echo had a command that's been disabled called. a word, or I'll use echo laugh. Nothing happens. I can say, Echo, can you laugh? Nothing happens. Echo, can you laugh?
Sure, I can laugh. Tee-hee.
So that is Amazon's response to all of this.
And it's obviously, the hard part is that most likely what happened was there was a tweak to, you know, it's not responding fast enough to something. So let's tune it up just a little bit to go after something that they're looking at. They made that tweak and suddenly started laughing at everybody. And then they took that tweak out.
And they took it out. Here's the best example we have of it. And I have to presume this is true. This is from last month. A guy named Tal Goldfuss tweeted this. This is what he heard his Amazon Echo.
Let's play the last sound.
Okay. So there's a couple of things at play here. First of all, why does he have a giant Toblerone bar?
That is a lot of chocolate.
And where can I get that? And then the other one is, obviously, if you heard that's kind of in the back of your house, you might be creeped out.
Yeah.
You might be. But it's not... This is what really gets me, is that people act as if, this is proof positive. There's something creepy going on with Amazon's Echo. But it's not. You find that creepy?
It's not creepy. And it's just, you know, we are in such a crazy world of all of this stuff being tested, and we're all beta testers. I mean, we're all there trying to figure this out. We've all got different houses. We've all got different audio pipelines. You know, like different, when I say pipeline, I mean different audio signatures.
Yeah.
Because it's bouncing off of different walls. And they're trying to, and these little devices that are sitting across the room.
They're refining them
constantly. Are trying to figure this thing out. And we're going to see all kinds of little hiccups on it.
But to then project into that, that's creepy. Yeah. My Echo's listening to me, blah, blah, blah. No, it's really, and I think this is the problem, is that people who understand how computers work are not creeped out by it. They understand what's going on. But then there's this whole new class of normal people who don't understand how computers work. It's a black box for them, and that makes them uncomfortable. It shouldn't. It's not. It work. You know, you got cars self-driving. There's nothing creepy about it. It's how computers work. If you understand that, if you've done any programming, if you've tinkered with computers, anybody watching the show, they understand that. So it's too bad that mainstream media picked up on this and made this some big deal, like this is proof that Amazon's listening.
Now they're
to
looking
you.
For something. They're looking, it's a press cycle. You know, they're just trying to push it forward. So that's it. But that's what it is.
It's a bunch of
people trying to get some a couple more eyeballs on their little show.
And Amazon, of course, has fixed it now, and all it does is go tee hee, which I really like the creepy laugh.
I would have kept the creepy
bring
laugh.
Back the
it would have been funny if Amazon could start if Echo could start understanding that you're telling a joke and then always laugh. That'd be funny.
That would
be great. You could sit there and do your own stand up. Or if she said that wasn't that funny. You know, like
awesome.
You know,
like, maybe heckle you from time to time. I don't come into your lab and try to tell you what to do. There actually was a bigger problem. You had this happen to you with Oculus Rift. This is the VR helmet from Facebook. And a critical error shut down everybody's Oculus Rift. Did it happen to you?
It did. Fortunately, my computer has Oculus Rift and HTC, so the whole upset lasted for me, for my kids.
You had about a Vive 15
minutes.
As well.
I had a Vive as well.
So the kids just had to use the Vive for 5 minutes.
So there's a lot of arrow shooting instead of droid killing, and it just kind of shifted over, so it wasn't.
Well, it tells you how often we use the Oculus Rift, because I never heard about this. My son, who's got it in his room, never mentioned it. I don't think he's using it anymore. Anyway, there is a fix. You got a fix?
Yeah, it comes up automatically. It says, "Hey, we're ready to fix it." Got an email that said we're going to give you $15 on the store. You know, they definitely handled it well. I mean, not handling the certificate is a big boo-boo.
I think that's what happened. Is the certificate got expired and then it stopped? Yeah, can't reach the runtime service. But an update of the certificate fixed it. These things happen. We've seen this before.
I mean, the biggest problem that I generally have with the Rift is, When Windows gets updated, then if you Oculus, sometimes there's this gap between when it works and doesn't work. So you're kind of used to it having a couple issues along the way. But overall, it's still the best headset. If you're doing VR, it's the highest quality. I think the highest quality experience.
Here's one that the Electronic Frontier Foundation discovered, and I think this is fairly serious and interesting, and I'm wondering what you think about it. According to a Freedom of Information Act revelation filed by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the FBI And now I'm really curious what you think about this. Was paying Geek Squad people, you know, you the Geek Squad at Best Buy where you bring your computer in, to inform if as they were repairing somebody's computer, they found illegal stuff on it. Chiefly, I think, child pornography. But if there was illegal content, it could have been, I suppose, stolen music. Could have been a lot of stuff. They were to inform, and then the FBI had a bounty program. And,
yeah, it was a bounty. It wasn't that they were paying them a salary or a stipend or something like that. It was that there was a bounty program that was available. It's probably available to a lot of people if you find that.
$500 if you find something and tell us. But what I don't like about this is it's essentially the FBI paying people to violate the law because now they're looking at my stuff on my hard drive.
Right.
They're basically using – it's another form of surveillance. Isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, normally you would need to get a warrant. You would need to get – that's what they're basically sidestepping. And they're, and I don't think that they're violating the law by doing it, but I think that's the problem is that by getting somebody – by creating a bounty system and not paying them as a salary, I believe that what happens there is that because you willingly let them into your house and they're working on your computer and they happen to see – you know, happen to see something – what they happen to see is the whole thing. And so they're not, they don't need a warrant because you let them in. You let them have the computer.
Right.
You let them do all those things.
Right.
And this is the thing that, like, when someone asks me, I go, oh, my computer isn't working. Oh, just take it in and have someone look at it. I'm like, I am not going to have someone look at my computer. And I don't have anything on it that I even care about. You know, it's all work product. But I still am like, I am not going to, like, hand my computer to somebody else and let them look at it.
That's... So the kind of analog of this is there are laws requiring, for instance, psychotherapists, mental health professionals.
Right.
If somebody says, I'm going to go murder somebody, they have an obligation to report. There's a law. And that's – I am fine with that. And it certainly there is an obligation if you're a Best Buy employee and you find illegal materials to report that. That's fine. That's not what we're saying. But the question the courts are going to have to deal with, does this make Best Buy employees in effect paid FBI employees? Does it make them are they now working for the government? In which case the Fourth Amendment does apply and that you do it is a warrantless search. And in fact, in the first case where this has happened, the judge did throw out the evidence.
Right.
So in a way, it works in the opposite way. It actually, this guy who was accused of hoarding child pornography was let go because they couldn't use the evidence.
Right.
So it really raises some interesting issues.
And for Geek Squad, of course, it's disastrous. You know, it is, you know, when you're trying to build trust, the biggest thing that everyone has, they're worried about is you doing things you shouldn't do when they're in their house. My father had Nationwide came into his into one of his clients' houses and saw a bunch of trees that looked a lot like marijuana, and so came back, took a bunch of photos. Like literally, this is an adjuster because something had fallen through the thing. Took a bunch of photos, sent it to the police. The police came. They put the woman in the car. These are like 60 years old, and they've got all these trees, and they put them in there, and they held them and everything else, and it turned out that they were hibiscus.
You know, like. Those hibiscus pushers.
They like hibiscus.
They,
you know, like it was, and so it turns out if you search hibiscus and marijuana, kind of look, the leaves look similar. You know, it's one of those things. But this is where that really goes wrong is that people start overreacting.
Yeah.
They start doing, you know, crazy things and the damage to
they're
the brand.
They're trying to make $500.
Right. You know, and the damage to the brand is a lot more than $500.
Best Buy says, yes, of course they will report illegal stuff, but there is some dispute. Now that we have this Freedom of Information Act, maybe there's less dispute about exactly what was happening.
I think giving
there was a bounty program.
Saying that they should report when they see something illegal
that's
makes
different.
Sense.
Yep.
Saying that we're going to pay you to do it, I think I agree with you that they got to take that out.
Then they become a branch of the law enforcement. Let's take a little break. Where does he get all these amazing toys? We have some amazing toys. Alex Lindsay's going to show us. We're going to talk about super cool cameras. We're going to answer a couple of calls for help. But before we go any further, let's talk to you about WordPress. Actually, our caller coming up is using WordPress. I know so many people are using WordPress. I was just visiting Extreme Tech. That's a WordPress site. Quartz is a WordPress site. Actually, we should have cake. Can we have cake on every show? But we should have cake for this show because WordPress just announced it is now running 30% of all the websites in the world. 30% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Your website should be running on WordPress. Go to WordPress.com. That's where I run my blog, LeoLaporte.com. So many publications, businesses, and individuals use WordPress.com because they do the hosting. They keep your WordPress running, smooth, patched, secure, have hundreds of templates, hundreds of plugins. I use the AMP plugin, the Google AMP plugin on my website, so it loads fast and mobile. Of course, it's HTTPS, so it's got better search results. And speaking of search results, of course, all WordPress.com sites have sitemaps and other SEO tools that mean your site's going to show up better. There's a great community there. There's social sharing plugins mean that when people visit your site, they can tell the world about your site on their Twitter feed or their Facebook feed. Great e-commerce options, by the way. Everything from a simple buy button, you know, just buy this thing, to a complete online store. And all of this starts at just $4 a month. And if you can do it yourself, even if you have no experience. Don't think you have to be an expert to do this. You can literally, in fact, do it right now. Go to WordPress.com/NSS and set up a website. It'll take you a few minutes. Represent you the way you want to be represented. If you're a business and you say, well, no, I have a Facebook page or, oh, I have a Twitter account. That's not it. You need a site that's your site with your domain name and your content that you control. And they make it so easy to do. No wonder 30% of all websites run on WordPress. You get started today with 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/NSS. WordPress.com/NSS. Create your new site. I've been using WordPress since it practically was invented by Matt Mullenweg back in the early 2000s. And I hosted it for a while myself. But once I found out they'll do the hosting for less than I was paying for the server, and they'll keep it up to date, and you've got these great experts you can call. They're there 24/7, Monday through Friday, and weekends too. I said, this is obvious. This is where I should be. WordPress.com/NSS. When you go there, you'll save 15% off your brand new website. So when we asked Alex to come up and do the show with us, we said, do you have anything new and cool you could show us? You came up with some interesting stuff.
Well, it's something that we've been dealing with, we've been working with a lot. And so, for the last 20, 25 years, I've been doing some version of, I got to take photos and I got to put them into 3D models, you know,
I remember, was it on Call for Help? Was it the old screensaver?
I think it was screensavers.
You put a magic marker and you put dots all over my face.
Right. And that was probably a solid 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
At least.
It's been,
you took pictures?
I took a couple photos and then I had to go through and by hand identify things and paint them all out. It was a process, you know. And
not to mention getting that magic marker off of my face.
I shouldn't have used a permanent pen. That's all I'm saying.
The Sharpie was a bad idea.
My bad, yeah.
So we've come a long way. You don't have to do that anymore.
You don't. And the tools just keep on getting better and better and better. A lot of the technology, whether it's for the stuff that I do where I just need to get a 3D model, a lot of times you can use this to either use it as a base that I'm going to build a proper 3D model from, or sometimes you can just use the data that you actually scanned. Now, this gets interesting when you think about throwing into VR or AR. Having that 3D
information. That's probably where there's a big demand for this now all of a sudden.
Suddenly exploding because of that. AR and VR are definitely pushing that, and that's why we're paying attention to it a lot.
Right.
Or accelerating what we've been doing for a long time.
Filmmakers have used this for a decade to create models in their CGI, their computer graphics.
It's used in everything from, it's photogrammetry is being used from construction to military to filmmaking to all these things. How do we gather this information? And sometimes that information is so big that it's really hard to gather any other way other than with pictures.
So photogrammetry is what you're calling this.
That's the first step. That's the little version. So the photogrammetry is something that anybody can do. You can download. And I'm going to show
No magic marker required anymore.
No magic marker required.
You just take pictures?
As an example, I took a couple photos of this little desk here.
Okay.
So if you look here, this is, you know, here are the photos that I took. And what you'll see is that I just kind of moved around.
Now, this is in an app called PhotoScan Pro.
PhotoScan Pro or PhotoScan Pro is pretty expensive. PhotoScan is a couple hundred dollars. But you can download the demo and do everything that I'm doing right now. So if you want to play with it, fully operational, you just can't save.
Didn't Adobe offer an app for your phone that would do this?
Autodesk. So they had 123D Catch.
That's it. 123D
Catch. They've taken it down. So
what?
I don't know why.
They want to make money on it because it's a free app.
I think that we did a lot of work for them by taking lots of photos and uploading them.
Oh, they got what they wanted.
And now they have it incorporated into Recap and some of the other stuff that they have.
Okay.
And so they have a huge lift for photogrammetry. Now, what I did there is I took this and I just said, go ahead and process it. So I didn't do anything to this other than grab the photos.
It looks grainy, though. Is there
That's just because it's scaled down a little bit.
Okay.
And then this.
That does look grainy.
Yeah,
that's
but this
a 3D
is,
image.
This is a 3D model. So now this is uncleaned up. This is just I pushed the button and said go. Now, this may look really rough, but now if I was building something, it is so hard. Before, I would have had to measure everything, figure out where it all is. Now I can sit there and just go, oh, I'm just going to build a polygon here, and I know that it's perfectly where it was. And now I can build a clean model if I want to with a more
photos. On top of it, maybe?
On top of that, just snapping to those points.
Got it.
And the big thing is that I can also, if I brought in a 35 millimeter camera or even a medium format camera and took a bunch of these photos.
So that was just a camera phone and a handful of photos.
It's my iPhone and seven photos. If I came in and took 20 photos with a higher resolution camera, I'd get much more data. And that data would be cleaner. And so that is a great way, especially if all you have is your camera with you, to gather some information. It's good to take, if you're going to do that, it's good to measure one thing. So like if I want to scale this, measure from point to point, so I know what this is, and then I can rescale that whole scene.
You know everything from there,
because it's all based on that. And so, so that is a that's photogrammetry, and that is a if you're in the field, if you don't want to carry a bunch of equipment, that's the way to
capture it. Or it's a static image,
static thing. And like for instance, I have some friends that do a lot of basketball players, football players for, you know, different sports games.
So you can do people.
So what they do is they have literally 150 cameras.
Yeah.
And you sit like this, and all 150 cameras take a picture, and then it uses photogrammetry to develop a 3D model.
So is that what they do if they're, like, capturing a basketball player's dunk? Or just if it's static?
They're using photogrammetry for that dunk, but it's a different. It's using the video. And it won't be as high resolution. You'll notice the one on the NFL where the guys were kind of turning. That's photogrammetry.
Okay, yeah. Now they use it like crazy on television, on NFL. They have all these great graphics of the guys.
That's photogrammetry.
So they brought them into a studio, and they had them go like this.
Right.
And then they got 150 shots at once.
Well, and those ones might even be less. They might have had 10.
Right.
You know, and they just go, you just sit there and you do whatever pose you're going to do.
Right.
Now, they probably did that on the day of the game or the day before. And so it was a little, what I noticed in Super Bowl, a little low resolution, but compared to what it's possible.
It's pretty cool.
But still pretty nifty. And so that is the, that's photogrammetry, and it's good for things that are like human beings or animals or so on and so forth, or you can't carry the stuff around. Now, once you want to grow from there, and when you're talking about industrial, so you want to do construction, you want to gather really, really accurate data, you start looking at LiDAR.
Okay.
So LiDAR is your laser scan of an entire scene, and fortunately, I have a friend who has a lot of LiDAR.
Let's go take a walk. Joining us right now, Fred Feikert. He is a principal at F3 and Associates. And you guys use LiDAR to what? Take pictures of stuff in three dimensions.
Yeah. So if you think about it, it's reality capture. But what it does is the easy way to think about it is millions of points.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you glued them all to the table, then that gives you the 3D model of it. And all these are...
This is all LiDAR we got here.
Right.
Now,
right.
LiDAR is a familiar name to me because of self-driving vehicles. Don't they have that spinning LiDAR on the top that's making a 3D image in real time as the car moves?
Yeah.
Is that the same thing?
It's similar. And then, you know, a lot of the cars are going to more... I think they're going to more to flash LiDAR, things of that nature and stuff like that. But for us, you know, we're a surveying company, but we... realize really quickly with like 3D printing and these type of things, you have to interact with the environment, and so they capture, you know, just that.
So you brought some stuff. This is the budget LiDAR. this is Leica. Okay.
And that's a BLK 360.
Yeah.
So this is inside here, there's a it's radar, so it can go through a plastic housing, right? It doesn't.
No,
it's the laser going through there.
Oh, there's a little gap.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
does
it's
this
spinning.
Spin?
It spins, yeah.
Okay.
And one thing to realize, too, if you think about it, is the Leica has versions of all these as well. So
Leica makes the whole range, but this
exactly.
is... How much is this for my home use?
That one, I think the raise is about $18,000.
Okay, never mind. All right. So, by the way, that was one of the points of the lawsuit between Uber and Google over the Waymo lawsuit and their engineer who apparently stole Google's low-cost LiDAR implementation. They'd figure out a way to get it to about the tenth of the cost, which is a huge deal in self-driving cars. An $11,000 LiDAR unit versus a $1,000 LiDAR unit, that's a huge deal. So these are expensive right now, but I presume they're going to come down as better technology.
This is the actual process. The ones behind you are a little bit more expensive.
So what are these? So let's talk about these here.
Those are just bigger, basically bigger versions.
almost cost myself some money. Tell us first about this big boy here.
Okay, so that's from ZNF. And that one is, that one will maxes out at 1,000,000 points per second.
Does this spin also?
It spins and then this spins as well.
So there's a, inside here, there's a little mirror or a little camera. Is it okay for me to do that? I guess not. And that's going to spin inside, and this is going to spin outside. And the idea is it's going to image as it's spinning. It's going to capture.
What it does is the LiDAR goes out, collects, a million. It'll max out, like I said, 1,000,000 dots per second. But then also what this one, why I use it a lot with Alex, is because it does HDR imaging afterwards. So then it glues the – so every dot ends up with a color.
Okay.
And then what they do is this one does high dynamic range. Now, we use a lot of the P40s that, again, it would be the Leica equivalent. But this one's a little bit more in line with the stuff that
I use. How much is this?
Those go 80 to 100, depends on. They all have various models.
Right, right. This is from Faro, one down here. Tell us about this. It's all the same idea, though, spinning, capturing.
Right. Yeah. Faro's really...
What do I get when I spend 10 times more money? A higher resolution image?
More accurate, collection rate. There's so many, and they all have versions, right? So this is like the X130. We have there's a S class and S150s. But this, Faro's really interesting because they have probes. They have a large... instrument line, we use it for metrology and things of that nature, and it kind of is a real good in the middle, but they also have a really wide range of stuff.
Interesting.
Right. So this is really used a lot in construction.
Here's a name you're going to recognize. This, and by the way, it's interesting because these are on what looks like surveyor tripods. Do surveyors use these?
Well, I'm a surveyor.
So your world has changed a lot in the last 20 years.
This would be the dream instrument we always talked about. And the SX10 is really interesting because if you think about these just collect the environment. This one interacts with the environment. So when we're laying out high rises and things of that nature, this you could lay out. And what they did, there's a really interesting article when they built this. They said, what could you do if you put a scanner inside of it? And this one has does 30,000 points per second, I believe. But you could be working. You go lay out a bunch of stuff.
So when I see a surveyor, it's two guys. There's one guy on the big one, and there's a guy holding a pole. Do you still have to do that?
No. This is so it's all robotic now. So this...
But what's this?
This will track
this. Goes
this.
With that.
And
okay.
Now it's funny.
So it's bouncing light off of these prisms in here.
To lay out, right. Okay. And so if you think about it, though, what's interesting, this one used to be able to look through it, even the modern instruments. Yeah. This is the first one because it has multiple cameras in there. And it does photogrammetry as well, and you operate with this. So you could go running with that thing, and that would go and pick you up.
So forgive me for not understanding your business very well, but in the old days, I thought a surveyor was looking to find property lines and lines of sight and elevations and stuff that. This does that?
It does that as well, yeah.
We'll make a 3D map of whatever it is you're surveying.
We specialize in a lot of construction, so bridges, dams, tunnels, things like that. But we still do some boundary, and so it basically is, like a Swiss. So this is my favorite.
Army knife is what you're about to say. And this is from?
Trimble,
which I've heard of for years as a GPS navigation system. They've now found a new business for themselves. All right, so now that we understand how much money you've spent. by the way, this also goes with the Trimble. This is a little GPS device so that you can match those points to their actual location in space.
The reason why I brought that is because we're going to do an example where we did a whole golf course. That's the Trimble R10, and it's... What's interesting, R10 model, I don't want to get too tech, but it's what they call you know, high definition GPS, where there's a whole new solution model that that particular unit does.
So it's more than just there's a dot, there's a dot, there's
yeah,
a dot.
It's different from like the R8 models and stuff.
Well, you were telling me that, for instance, when you're surveying a building, you would survey it not just at the beginning, but all along the process of building this building. So you now have a series of It's not an elevation anymore. It's a 3D maps of what's in that building.
Right.
So from every step of the way.
Yeah, so we'll lay it all out and work with the contractors, but also we'll be scanning as we go. So if you think about it, it's as-built-ing.
It's a real as-built.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, or like wow. We use a lot of it in refineries, so you know where pipes are connecting and things
so like they that. So if they had to make a repair, they'd know exactly where they're going and where what's in that wall. For
so instance. If you, as you build as you go and you have it with the BIM models, but then also if you think about it for maintenance, you could literally, you know what's behind it. And so 3 years from now, you could just go right to that spot
wow.
and nail it.
Yeah. Now, earlier you were messing around in here. What did you guys do?
So we just did a quick scan.
Should I ask?
Yeah. So I did it with the ZNF.
Okay. And you scanned our studio.
Yeah, just I did a quick setup. But so that's the studio. And so
I could do that with my camera phone. That's wait a minute. Hold on there.
So, but what's interesting
about it's a 3D map of the studio.
Right. So that's actually all the dots, right? But what's neat about this, if you go back to RealView,
compare that to the photogrammetry.
Right. So then, if you wanted to get a measurement from, say, there to the desk, well, anywhere like there. So.
And that's how accurate.
Well, that one there, you know, we always say like 3 millimeters, mm-hmm. you know, eighth of an inch. There's a lot, obviously, that goes into that. You know, the specs on that are pretty high. You know, how you mesh the clouds, how far you go, but. You know, there's a range.
So one of the things we've started to do is that we do a lot of events that are in different locations. And so when we do our site visit, we're starting to scan. We take this. We just throw that scanner in.
Wow.
Now, when we're having conversations for the next 2 months before the event, we go, how high was the ceiling right here? And we just draw a line and go, it's this high.
That's awesome.
And then if we want to build for our clients, we can take that 3D model, we can put it into VR, we can add all the chairs and the staging and everything else, and they can see exactly what it's going to look like before they get there.
That's really
cool. And so that's the that's some of the power. And
how long did it take to do this 3D model?
It took like the scan maybe 9 minutes.
Not long. Long enough. No longer than taking photos of the site.
Much less.
Much more.
And more much accurate. More accuracy.
So, you
and
this is all the way around.
Yeah, and that's all 3D. That's a 3D model. So it's you can see he's snapping to anything that's there.
It's all in there. Now.
It's all in there. All those dots are there.
So you measured every surface.
Everything's measured all at one time, and then you can go back and do any of the measurements that you want. So if you want to make any updates, and then what we did last summer was we did a golf course. So the challenge was how my family has a golf course in Pennsylvania, uh-huh. Birdsfoot,
This is the golf course.
My brother was willing to let me run around and put a bunch of little nails in his golf course. And the challenge here was it's 2.5 square miles of.
That's a lot.
And so how do you get all those scans to tie together? And that's what we use this Trimble for, because if you look at where those numbers are, those are all
GPS.
That's the GPS points of where we knew. That's where we scanned.
Right.
So
you can actually stitch these together perfectly, knowing exactly where everything is. What would you now? Why would somebody do that? What would you want that information for?
So the concept here, that we're starting to test, is if you think about when you have that data, you can now build extra things for AR, extra things for VR. So imagine being able to pick up your phone and look at. It'll range out for you from where you are.
Golfers where that is. Would love that, right? They could say, "Here I am. How far is it to the hole?"
And it also knows not only how far the hole, but the grade,
what's the elevation,
everything.
What's the grade?
It knows everything about that because we have all that data down to less than a half inch and over the entire thing. So,
how about gaming? It feels like this. You could do this for gaming.
Absolutely, absolutely. When you're trying to absolutely grab, and when you look at the data,
that is so cool. It looks like your golf course is on the moon, but
if you look at it's literally when you look at that zoom in, it's actually getting the grass. Like if you zoom in a little bit,
it's
there,
that detailed.
It's you can see the different how they
that,
mow the grass,
the rough versus the green,
and all the that's all the texture in the
sand hole. Trap.
So it's an incredible amount of data, and we can then class that. For instance, if we wanted to simulate how a ball goes across that. oh, this is deeper grass, this is thinner grass, this is sand, this is all those other things. This is the actual where we get our hot dogs.
There. Yeah,
the hot dogs
you can
are very
see
good.
I called it hot dogs.
And but yeah, you can see all the trees. You can see everything. So, but yeah, for games, especially if you want to gather something that's very specific,
yeah.
Like I want to reproduce a location in the game, your fastest way to do it is to do LiDAR. Now, you may decide you're going to then remodel it.
A designer's going to go in there with those data points and make it something else.
But it's so much
faster. You've got a starting point that is incredible.
Exactly. Yeah. Now you can just snap to those points and start building out all of your network, and it's going to cut your modeling time down by 60-90%.
And if you think about it, right, every one of these dots has a true color, and it's positioned proper, you know, because I came in with a GPS network at first, so it knows exactly where it is in the world. And then you can snap literally from a branch at one side of the golf course and get a distance to, you know, a sign at the other side.
So this is the beginning of modeling the world, basically.
Yeah.
And we've seen interesting uses. A few weeks ago, we had somebody come in they had used LiDAR from airplanes to discover ruins in Central America that no one even knew existed. And they have found now... I think there were Mayan ruins that with basically cities the size of New York City that no one knew about because they were under the canopy. This is amazing what they can do with this.
And we're also experimenting with mixing the photogrammetry that I showed earlier and the LiDAR, because the LiDAR captures all of that stuff, but it's really expensive to start capturing every little divot. But what we've done is taken a drone, taken a whole bunch of photos. We then sync those photos to the LiDAR that we have here and kind of fill in all the spaces that we didn't, you know, that don't need to be quite as accurate, but we still want to make sure we cover them all.
Wow.
And so those are the other things you can do with a mixture of drone and LiDAR and photos. And, you know, it's not one or the other. It's a lot of times it's all of it.
Yeah. Really, really interesting. So this is a use of LiDAR that we've heard so much about the cars, that this is a whole other use of it. Is this, now, I've heard there's two different kinds of LiDAR. There's time to flight.
Oh, yeah.
And what's the other one? I can't remember it. But one measures, what is it?
Phase-based.
So one is measuring how long it takes a light to bounce off and come back, right?
And the other
that's
one,
actually how our lighthouse works. It has a little LiDAR sensor in that camera, and that's how it's making a 3D model of the world around it. That's easy with a static scene, right?
Right. And they're just different technologies. Like, it's really interesting that, actually, I think it takes the beam and splits it into three. You know, that's a phase-based. A lot of the P40s...
How does phase-based work?
It's... Well,
if something's in phase or out of phase, it can...
Yeah, it's... It's how the wave comes in, I guess.
Yeah, you know? I got it. Yeah, yeah. Very interesting.
It gets...
This is cool. This has really changed your business.
Oh,
when you
yeah.
started in surveying, were you just, you know, holding the pole?
We started... we always
measuring things.
Yeah. And then what happened was is that because we're so involved in construction, I think we just kept in the larger buildings and stuff like that. So we've always had to stay ahead. You know, it's like the 3D printing. We did that because a lot of times at that time you couldn't interact with the environment, you know, with the computer. And so we would print it out and a guy would say, okay, here's your dam gate or here's your piping that goes in. And so
Sold. I remember my college roommate who was studying architecture doing foam core models with an X-Acto knife.
Exactly.
And that's long gone.
Yeah, now it's all computerized, you know. And so, yeah, it's and I think the other thing that's been really interesting is the convergence of all the technologies, like me and Alex working together, but and a lot of these new companies that are coming through. But I'm ending up in, we were ending up in a lot of industries that we never thought we'd be in.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. So obviously construction, and that's kind of a natural surveying, natural yeah. segue. But now you're thinking about surveying a site for a later broadcast where you want to set up all this stuff. What a great use for that.
And then when you think about volumetric, so the next big thing for VR is volumetric VR, which is that I'm no longer in just one place and looking around. I can walk the entire right. size of the set
right.
and get a sense of it. Now, how do you gather all the data to walk through
that's
that
entire?
That's
a lot more data.
So yeah. Yeah. So LiDAR is the beginning of doing a lot of those things. And you may model some of the rough stuff, but imagine, like, for instance, using LiDAR to scan statues or scan something that's really complex that you're not going to want to try to model by hand, and it's something that might be historical, but I want to be able to walk around it as a viewer. Those are the kind of things that LiDAR becomes really useful.
Is it reasonable to think that this stuff is going to get less expensive and more widely available, and there'll be more applications because it'll be cheap and you can do it and do things you would never have thought of before? Maybe you have a 3D model of a convenience store, and I bet you Amazon's doing this, and then you know which items have been taken off the shelf because it doesn't match the model.
Right. Well, and the cars are driving the price down. I mean, when we looked at what we have in all of our phones, those were very, very expensive spy cameras a long time ago.
Yes.
That when they got released,
now
they became
cheap.
Now they're nothing. You know,
that's
definitely the trajectory. But it'll take another 10 years before it's.
Fred Feichert is a principal at F3 and Associates. If you want him to come and map you, he could bring the big boy, the Imager 5010C, and really get a detailed 3D map of your next project. That is really cool. Fred, thank you for bringing all these fun toys by. This is really, really neat stuff. We hear so much about it, but actually see it in action is really cool. Right now, we're going to take a break and come back with a lot more, including Megan Maroney, who has a new... everything new, you know, and shiny, but now she wants to have a wooden laptop cover. So she's found one from Toast, aptly named. We'll give you a look at the Toast laptop cover. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. This is even an area where technology has completely changed everything. It's not a surprise. It comes from Quicken Loans. Now, by the way, we've always said the number one lender in the nation, according to J.D. Power, Customer Satisfaction Award, number one for 8 years running. But now I can safely say they are also the number one lender in the country in terms of just the number of loans and the volume of money lent out. They are amazing. And one of the reasons Quicken Loans has grown so is because they give customers what they want. Perfect example, their new service called Rocket Mortgage. You've seen it advertised. It was on the Super Bowl. Rocket Mortgage is the simplest, fastest way to get a home loan or get a refi. It's really taken the home loan process and put it into the 21st century. So fast, so easy, you could do it on your phone, your laptop, or your computer. It's an entirely online mortgage approval process. A few simple questions, things you already know, no trip to the bank, no form, no application, no 20 pages worth of applications. And what I like, no going to the attic to find all your bank statements or pay stubs. Everything they need, they can get through their trusted relationships with financial institutions. You just have to give them permission. They get the numbers they need. They crunch them. And within minutes, based on income, assets, and credit, they will give you a loan for which you qualify. You choose the rate. You choose the term. You choose the down payment. And then say, what do you think? And they say, you're qualified. You're approved. Literally, in under 10 minutes, you could do it while you're at an open house. The easiest, simplest, and frankly, most transparent way to get a loan. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans to get started. In fact, if you're thinking maybe you're going to be buying a house or refinancing, I'd go there right now and get that account set up so it'll even be faster. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. They're an equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Be very simple for you just to set this up. And then when you're at a open house or you see something you like, you press a couple of buttons and you show that realtor, we're approved. We're approved. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. Quicken Loans bringing the mortgage process into the 21st century. I've seen Megan wandering around with this laptop with this wooden case. I said, this is so cool. I said, Megan, you got to tell us about the Toast laptop cover. Watch.
A lot of you have been asking about my laptop redesign. For the entirety of 2017, I covered my laptop in random stickers out of some kind of misguided protest against the garbage fire that was American politics. I know, the two aren't really related, but we all have our coping mechanisms. New year, new me. That's why I upgraded to one giant custom laptop cover that I stuck on my 15-inch MacBook Pro to cover all the stickers and start over. This one came from Toastmade, and it wasn't cheap in price or in quality. It costs $84 to add your custom design. It's only $59 for just the wood cover, and it comes in four different colors of wood veneer. The stickers are designed for specific models because they fit curved edges and around all the specific ports. I was very impressed at how easy it was to attach. The materials themselves are high quality and durable. The wood veneers are responsibly sourced, and they laser cut each laptop cover with tiny holes that will help with installation and removal. Toastmade has covers for all the rest of your gadgets too, including Windows laptops, Chromebooks, phones, tablets, Nintendo, Xbox, and PlayStation gaming consoles, Apple Pencils, and even your smart home assistants like your Echo Dot or your Google Home. As long as we're allowing these gadgets to become such a big part of our lives, they may as well be pretty. You can find out more at Toastmade.com.
Thank you, Megan Maroney. Always a pleasure to have Megan on the show. We're going to get a call for help here in just a second, but before we do, let's talk cameras.
That's always my
right?
thing. Yeah, absolutely.
Alex Lindsay, avid photographer, as am I. You're a little bit better than me, but we always are looking at the newest and greatest.
Yep.
And, of course, whenever I'm about to buy a camera, I go to dpreview.com to check the reviews. From DP Review, Dan Bricaglia is here. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here.
You just back from Japan, huh?
So I didn't actually go to Japan. I was holding down the fort back in the office, but I have been on top of everything that's come out, and I'd love to share with you some of the new gadgets.
So I'm not familiar with CP Plus 2018. This is a pretty important show, though, I guess, because it's in Japan.
Yeah, it's a pretty big show. It's kind of the insider show. And, you know, a lot of big new technologies get launched. In years past, it's been sort of more camera-oriented. But actually, this year, we saw a lot more lenses and accessories, which is pretty exciting. You know, as the camera market is sort of shifting and people are finding less reason to upgrade, they are finding reason to go out and buy lenses and accessories.
Well, tell us about, you found a speed light. I actually have used this Canon speed light, the 470EX. They have an AI version.
Right. And just to clarify, it stands for auto intelligence.
Oh,
so it's not artificial intelligence.
Oh, okay.
But what's really cool about it is they've worked out a way to have the flash automatically swivel its head,
what?
To bounce off the ceiling. And I think we have a video of it somewhere. Actually, if you scroll down
there. So
this
has always been a TTL strobe, which means it goes through the lens. It does great metering. But you had to manually move it around to get it to point at the ceiling. Oh, look at that. And does it know the best place to point?
It does, exactly. So it figures out the correct angle. What's really cool about it is flash photography can be really intimidating to a lot of people.
Yes.
And, you know, the direct flash on someone's face method is not really the best way to go. So this sort of breaks down that barrier and makes it just way simpler to get a really, really nicely exposed photo when using a flash.
I have always liked bounce flash, but you're right. Positioning is critical because you have to get the angles just right.
So you just set it to it. You give it a setting that says, I now want you to do bounce, right? And it just figures it out.
Right. So basically what it does is you point it at your subject. It figures out how far away the subject is. And then it looks upwards, measures the distance from the ceiling back down to the flash. Figures out how much power to use. Yeah, it's really cool. We haven't, other than this quick demo that we did one day, we haven't gotten it back yet into test, but we're really looking forward to it. So,
well, I take it of the three images, the third image was the one where the AI had figured out what the best bounce angle, because it really is perfect.
Exactly.
It came out, you know, the first image was fine. The second one was typical right in your face flash, really blown out.
Exactly.
But that third image didn't look like a flash had been used at all. I mean, it was really remarkable. That's great. I want
and
one.
Is it measuring the color of what it's bouncing off of as well as the distance?
It isn't, and that is actually one. That was the first thing we asked. You know, Canon, when they introduced it to us. And I guess maybe that's something that will come down the line. Presumably, you know, if you had a dark colored ceiling, a black ceiling, you would need more power. And, you know, you can bias it and crank it up in those situations, but it's not that intelligent yet to be able to account for that.
You mentioned that lenses were also very popular. And for a long time, I kind of mocked the Sigma lenses. Those are kind of, if you couldn't afford
a Canon
or a Nikon lens, you'd get a Sigma lens. But that has really changed. They're getting some beautiful lenses. They announced a new line of lenses.
Yeah, so Sigma actually just launched. There's nine lenses that were already in existence for Canon and Nikon users, but they've now launched them for Sony E-mount users as well.
Oh, good. I'm a Sony A7 shooter, an A9 shooter, actually.
Well, now you can mount a 14 F1.8, a 20 F1.4, a 24 F1.4, a 35 F1.4. There they all
Holy
are.
Holy cow.
And these are great lenses.
Really?
And like you said, these Art Series lenses are really excellent. The third-party lens manufacturers have just come really, really far. I've shot with many of these, and they're really remarkable.
Sony has to be grateful because, frankly, the biggest downfall to the A7 and A9 series is there aren't enough FE lenses.
Yeah, exactly.
I buy the GM lenses, the high-quality lenses, and they're very, very good. Are these comparable to Sony's own GM lenses?
In a lot of ways, yeah. I'd expect we haven't tested them yet, so hopefully the autofocus performance, that would be the big thing we'd hope, is at that same level as you'd get with a GM lens. But optically, they're definitely same kind of quality.
Yeah, when you get an A9, which is crazy, and I didn't buy it for myself, my wife bought it for me. But you really, because of the very fast shooting and all the things it does, the fast focus, you really do want a Sony lens. But on the other hand, if I can get an f1.4 105 for a lot less, I might.
Exactly.
I might vary and with
might
great
be way
optics.
To fill it in.
I might live with a slightly slower autofocus.
Right. For sure.
Yeah, I'll have to take a look at those. Did Sony announce any new FE lenses?
So Sony continues to really, push the envelope, and they're really, really taking pro photography seriously with their A series. And so they announced a 400mm f2.8 G Master.
This is the only problem with these Sony cameras. They're compact, right?
They
they're
look
mirrorless.
Very nice.
They're but you put a normal lens on it, well, it looks weird.
If you look at the Canon 400mm, yeah. It's comparable in
but
size.
But still.
It's just a really small camera.
Where's the camera on that thing? Holy cow.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a lens you see people on football field shooting with the Olympics, that kind of thing. So yeah, that's exciting. No pricing info on that one yet, but I'm sure it'll be up there.
I really love it that we're starting to see these third party lens makers see themselves in a different light, so to speak.
Yeah,
not as just like a low cost alternative, but you're seeing Otis and Voigtlander and all these companies really make beautiful glass. That's just a twist, something different. And I take it we saw quite a few companies doing that.
And I think that part of it is because their market is different, too. I think there's not that much in between. So if you're not going for the high end, those the high end is really the only ones using the SLRs now.
It's true.
The market for a $300 kind of okay lens is probably
zero.
Getting, yeah. I mean, so I think that they have to move up there. And I think, in the world that, like we work in with film lenses, PL lenses, and so on and so forth, those ones, you don't think about whether it's one of the camera manufacturers. I mean, we're buying Ingenue, or not buying, renting Ingenue lenses at some of the big Canons and Fujinon. And so, that third-party market is thriving because we always think of it that way. But you're spending an order of magnitude more on the lenses. And so, but I think that this kind of higher-end, that's where they all have to go because I don't know. I mean, you probably have more data than I do, but it seems like most of the people that are they're taking pictures with their phones, or they're taking pictures, or they're going to SLR, and then they're really expecting good glass.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
How about this? The new Sigma Bokeh Master, which weighs
in. Yeah, this is a cool one.
Like 3 pounds.
Love it.
Yeah, this is going to be a portrait photographer's dream lens.
Yeah, 105. Yeah.
It is just a monster.
Any price, though, on that? I mean, do you know what it's going to cost?
Do we have pricing? Let me check here. I don't think we have pricing on that one yet, no.
Yeah, I look at these and I go, I'd love it, but...
Sigma's been pretty good about keeping the price down, though, so I wouldn't expect it to be too outrageous.
Good. Well, maybe that's my next lens. Yeah. Let's talk about Sony itself. They announced the successor to the very popular A7. We love the A7.
Yep.
There's A7R. We've already seen the A7 R3. There's the A7S and S2. And now they have an A7 III. This is their low-cost A7, right?
Yeah, so this is sort of they're calling it their basic model, which I think we at DP Review agree undersells how good this camera is.
You said it's comparable to the A7S.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, it's
in low light.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the cool thing is it sort of takes, you know, the best parts of the A9, the best parts of the A7 III, and kind of strips it down a little bit and puts it into this package that's really affordable. And I think the coolest thing about this camera is the price point, $2,000 to get a really, really capable full-frame camera.
Wow. Yeah. And I am very fond of the A7 series. I think they're really great cameras, not just for stills, but for video as well. They're very nice video cameras.
Oh, yeah.
So Canon is being... So Canon and Nikon, I'm just watching these guys and thinking they're getting their lunch eaten by Sony.
Yeah.
And they're getting their lunch eaten by the mirrorless. I know you like the Fuji a lot. You were here with the GFX.
Yeah.
But Canon is not sitting still. They have a mirrorless system now?
They do. It's still sort of targeted towards mostly enthusiasts and entry level. So they haven't put out a proper pro level mirrorless camera, but we did see them launch at around CP Plus the EOS M50 rather, and it's a very budget and well, it's not a budget, but it's an entry level camera. But it's starting to get the technologies that Canon users are asking for in these mirrorless cameras. So it finally has 4K video. Though it has a pretty significant crop factor, which is a little bit of a disappointment.
It's an APS sensor, right?
It is. It's an APS-C sensor. It's the first Canon to have an auto send to cell phone feature, which is pretty cool.
It
seems to work really well.
Is it pulling GPS as well?
No. Yes. I'm sorry.
It does.
Will, yeah.
Oh, right, that's something I really miss in my Sonys.
That's something that
I need
GPS. I feel like that's one of the reasons I like taking pictures with my cell phone is I always know where I shot.
Well, and the 5D Mark IV has GPS, which is really
right,
nice.
Right, so just to clarify, the camera itself doesn't, but when you have it
pairs
hooked up
your
to your phone, it will store that information.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what the Sonys are doing
pretty
as well.
Cool.
Yeah, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, and so I think a lot of people are hopeful that Canon's going to keep taking mirrorless seriously. And hopefully that this, entry-level product is just the beginning of more good stuff to come.
Do you think mirrorless is going to gain traction and eventually replace DSLRs?
I do. I think that the mirror is, it's a holdover from the film days. And there's just not really a need for it. And it's kind of been proven that you can do a lot more, actually, once you take that mirror box out. And I just think we're in that awkward sort of transition period. I'd call it, the digital photography's teenage years. It's going to be a while before Canon and Nikon get to the point where Sony is, but
they better not wait too long.
I mean, and it's going to be a while, and still though, when push comes to shove, you're still seeing DSLRs, like you said, the pros shooting with at sporting events and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's the reliability where mirrorless hasn't quite hit in that caliber, but it will get there. So.
I have to say, with that A9 and the speed with which I can shoot, and I love silent shooting,
right?
Which is really great for sneaking up on people. No, I like to do candid. I like to do candid stuff, and especially candid street shooting, and to be able to shoot silent is and get great image quality. It really is a selling point. That's phenomenal.
Absolutely, and I really like when you start having adjustable monitors and so on and so forth. A lot of times you can be looking, you can look down and look like you're looking at your photos, and you're.
It's crazy that that Nikon and Canon don't want to do articulated in their big
and there's so many things
cameras.
Like you get into press events and you turn that monitor down.
Yeah,
I can reach up here. And I'm looking at what I'm seeing.
Yeah, well, it's exciting. It sounds like it was a great show, and of course, if you want to read about it. There's a lot of coverage at dpreview.com. Dan Brecaglia, thank you so much for giving us an update on the latest and greatest camera gear.
My pleasure.
All right. It's always good to talk to you. Take care, Dan.
Take care.
You just made our mouths water. More stuff we want to buy.
Of course.
What do you shoot with these days?
I have
your iPhone.
My iPhone mostly. I will say that the big three for me is I have my iPhone is probably 90% of my shooting. Then a DxO I still carry around.
iPhone attachable.
Low
camera.
Low light. It's better low light. I get a little bit more resolution.
Yep.
So if I think I want to print something, I'm going to take a picture.
It's an
APS-C
sensor.
And I got it in my bag. I got it in my pocket. It's easy for me to pop around. So I still use that. And then I use a Canon Mark II. Older.
Yep.
I haven't upgraded it in a long time, but it does what I need it to do.
I'll lend you the Mark IV.
That'll hurt.
It'll hurt.
I don't know if Carlito will let
you. Got
let,
the glass.
Let me.
I have the glass.
I have Carlita, a lot
I have
of glass.
The lenses. It's just a body.
Well, the funny is that all my glass has been absorbed because we use them.
Oh, you're
on
using
our,
them on your Black Magics?
No, we have the Black Magics are all PL or mostly PL. We have couple Canon mounts, but we primarily use them.
Video.
We have the Canon ME200s, which are the super high sensitivity cameras. They're like little boxes, and they can see almost at night. And so when we go into events where, oh, I don't know how good the lighting's going to be, right, we just bring those because we know we can get it as light as we need to.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to Japan, as you know, next month, and I'm trying to decide. I think I'm going to bring the A9 with me. I wish I had more lenses.
See how you just go to Japan and buy something.
Ooh, that's what,
because you go to
Akihabara and get some
Yodobashi.
Lotus lens you nobody ever heard of. Yeah,
well, you go to I always go to Yodobashi Camera and
Yodobashi, is that in Tokyo?
That's in Akihabara.
Akihabara, okay.
And so
I'm going.
So you go to Yodobashi and there's cameras in there, and you're like, where did this come from?
I never heard of this. It used to be like that with computers. You see these little computers go, they don't sell that in America. Nope, we're never going to sell it in America.
Oh, well, the best thing is if you really want to know like what's possible, there's the size of the studio, there's a whole section there that's just rice cookers. And you're like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
How many ways to cook rice do you need?
No, they sing to you and they do things, and there's like big ones and little ones. And the best thing though in Akihabara is there is a geek there. So
I have to set aside a few days for Akihabara.
Oh, well, at least one. And the secret. So Yodobashi Camera, I was just talking to someone about this. Yodobashi Camera is great. It's right off the Akihabara subway. But if you go to, it's like around the corner, and if you search for it, you can find it. There is a Raw Electronics, like this underground, you know, like, so
straight out of Blade Runner, right?
Straight out of Blade Runner. So I saw some raw XLR cable, like just raw audio cable just hanging out, cut off. And I was like, I looked at it closely because we were looking for something. And then there's like this little, there was like, you know, one of the little cloth. And so they're like, and I just go through it. And it's this whole world of, there's like one whole booth that's all LEDs, like raw LEDs. Oh. One that's all connectors and one that's all, and there's all these, and what I was told, and I have to do with research. I think there's like a whole thing. What I was told, there's all these women that are going through and buying stuff and grabbing stuff. And I saw a couple men, but when I was there, there were all these women that were like buying all this stuff. And I'm like, what are they doing? And they said, well, they do prototypes. And so they come
parts.
Down. They all live within a couple blocks. Now this is what someone told me, so I have to do more research on it. But they said they do prototypes for smaller companies. You know, they get the schematic and they just wire them all up and they give them back to them. And they're really good at it. And I said, so where are the men? He goes, oh, the men can't do it. The women do it all. The men can't do it. They wire them up. So they're all going through their buying, and
I need to go on a
really
geek
cool.
tour of Japan. I'm going on a cultural tour. I want the geek tour. I should go with you. That's what I should do. All right. Hey, it's time for a call for help. On the line. And I'm sure you get some ribbon for this. Tony in Orlando, Florida. Hi, Tony.
Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Tony Orlando, we're doing great. You're legendary, I want to say.
Oh, really?
Yes, because you do one of the most popular Disney podcasts and websites out there, right?
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, we have a podcast called the Disney Parks Podcast. We do that weekly. We do two news shows and an interview. And then I also have a website called Disney by the Number. It's all facts about Disney.
So. Is there enough to say about Disney to keep those sites and podcasts going?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you don't just cover Disney World. You cover Disneyland and Disney Europe and all the other Disneys?
Yeah. 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 Awesome. Yeah, we cover all of it.
Yeah, there's a lot to say. Disney's gotten kind of busy. What's the latest on the Star Wars hotel? Because I'm excited about that.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen here in Florida. It's going to be right near the Star Wars land at the Disney's Hollywood Studios.
When is Star Wars land open?
2019.
So next year, and then the hotel will be after that at some point.
Yeah, probably a little bit after that. And it's going to be very small, but very expensive.
Just like my cameras.
It's just like, but that's just going to Disney. Disneyland. I've been to Disneyland, and it's already very expensive.
But this is why you want to go to this.
Yes.
You become a character in Star Wars. They give you a costume.
Correct.
They give you a mission.
What?
You are in an environment. You look out the window of your hotel. You don't see Orlando.
Space.
You see a planet.
Coruscant.
Yeah.
Tatooine.
Yeah, completely immersive experience. You'll have a whole mission that you'll have to complete during your stay. And depending on how you interact with certain things, you may be on the bad side of the Force or the good side of the Force.
You could go in not knowing and find out. Through your stay.
Yeah, They're saying something like, if you crash the Millennium Falcon, you'll be on the bad side of the Force.
Yeah, I could feel the dark side pulling me already. Right, that sounds so cool. So if people want to know more, where can they find your podcast?
Go to DisneyParksPodcast.com.
Easy enough. So what can we do to help you?
Yeah, so we're looking to kind of expand the podcast and do a talk show where people can call in. So we're looking for something that we can call up, queue up the callers, and then answer their questions live on air.
Like a radio show.
And how are they listening to it live? Where are you streaming it?
Yeah, we're streaming right now. We're using something from Ecom to broadcast directly to Facebook. And we just found something called Switchboard that will allow us to do Periscope, Facebook, and YouTube simultaneously.
Well, as you know, we do stream live. It's my greatest regret. No, we did it because we like the interactivity and we like the buzz of doing it live. It's much more fun to do stuff live, but it is more expensive.
Right.
And, you know, you add a lot of complexity when you're doing video. Everything gets more complicated. But are you doing video or just audio?
We're doing video and audio.
Oh, you're already there, so you know. I don't have to warn you away from that. When we first started doing Twit, we did do call-in shows.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember Net at Night with Amber MacArthur, but we would take calls, and we would actually, at the end of the show, we would have all the people who were listening live say good night, and they all shouted good night. It was a lot of fun. And at the time, we used something called TalkShoe. So what your call got me thinking, I wonder, is TalkShoe still around? Yeah, it kind of is, believe it or not. I don't know if it's around because they forgot to switch off the lights when they went home.
Right.
That's my sense of it. They haven't really updated the site, but it still works. You were part of the call we did. We actually set up, I logged in. My account was still good. I set up the TalkShoe interface. You can see down there. Actually, take down the lower third so people can see the number. Maybe people will call in. 724-444-7444. And then you enter the call ID, 49966. And there it is, close up. And then you don't need that PIN number at the end. If you don't have a TalkShoe account, you could just... That's my PIN number, I guess. You could just enter in, I think it's *1. They'll tell you what to do. And then we have Captain Jeff in Texas. Are still in there. Let me unmute them and see if... Hey, guys, can you hear me? Are you in there? The idea was, and this is how we used it, is that we would be able to pick up an individual caller, put them on the air, answer their question, then put them on hold. They could listen in the TalkShoe interface. The problem is I really feel like...
I can't hear you, but I can hear you on the webcast.
There you go.
I can't hear Leo.
Oh, hi, guys.
This is Tony.
Yeah, so we're not feeding you the right audio. I'm doing something wrong in here.
I'm the one that says from Texas.
Okay, good. Look, people are calling in. There's Florida.
There's
Ted.
Oh, hey, Leo.
I don't honestly know how this works or if it's just like a ghost site that is like a ghost ship still sailing and the robots
are Northern Minnesota. Hello.
See, it's working. So, and they call in with a regular phone number. I'm going to mute you all. I'm sorry, because I'm afraid of who knows what will happen if I don't mute you all. But I think that that's one thing you could look at. I don't know if they're still around. But the site is TalkShoe, just like Talk Show, but it's a shoe, not a show. And we set up a free account, and we used this for years, and I really liked it. They're wondering right now. the janitor's in there sweeping up going, what's going on? There's somebody... There's 1,000 people on this.
The fans on the server just turned up. It was like they're trying to figure out what happened.
I bet there are other ways to do that, I would guess. Now, you do it too, right?
This is how we started. So this was...
This might be more reliable.
This is you hook literally a phone line into it, and then it has XLR on the way on. XLR on the
way
out.
This is a device, a basic device called a Henry. The problem with phone lines is they're not the right impedance and they're not balanced. And so the sound quality is terrible. So you need, and this is how I started too. In fact, we probably still have my old Henry lying around. It's just a box with some circuitry in it that makes the phone line so you could patch it into a mixer and use the audio from the phone line. And this thing looks like you can pick up,
dial and everything on it.
It's from the same company, JK Audio.
Yeah, JK Audio makes a lot. They make a lot of the different interfaces for this. Now, this is another one that we were looking at before the show is another one called Call-In studio. We haven't used it.
This is software only. You would think in this day of VoIP and WebRTC and all of these ways that you can do calls over the internet that you wouldn't need regular phone lines. The problem with using a Henry or something like that is this takes a regular phone line, and that means you can't get multiple callers. Now, on the radio show, we spend a lot of money to have a custom line with a rollover. So the way we do it is that we have one number, you know, on the radio show, you call 8888-ASK-LEO. Right. That is a toll-free number that then rings into, what is the name of that? There's a call thingamajiggy.
And it
rolls over, and you can pick up a line, hang up on it, and that'll open a line, and so you can get as many calls as you want that way. But that's expensive.
And we use a VX. VX Prime is what we're installing in our new studio.
Is that hardware or software?
It's hardware, and this is from Telos.
Well, that's the best. Oh, that's what we're using.
That's a serious system. Yeah, and so this allows you to take in the callers, manage the callers, talk back to the callers.
Every radio show, every call-in show in the country uses this.
Exactly.
This is it. This is what I use on the
Now you're probably looking at
that's really expensive.
It's about $6,000 to $7,000 for that to go away. But here's the deal is that once you have that, it does it. You know, like you just have to decide, you know, it's like buying
Well, and you can even have, as we do, a call screener that is picking up the calls, preparing them, putting them on hold. And frankly, it depends on how pro you want to get. The advantage of doing that is if I use TalkShoe, when I pick up the phone, I have no idea what I'm going to get. Earlier, we got somebody flushing the toilet.
Over and over and over again.
You can't control that. Yeah. With this, you have a call screener. She can use her best judgment to say, oh, this person's okay. We're going to put them on the line. There's even room on here for her to write in a message, a couple of lines. That's all about where the person's calling from and what they want to know. Mm. And then you could pick up the line. So this is actually the handset. I don't know how you got it out of my studio, but this is the handset I use in the Tech Guy. It's a little dusty. This is not the one. This is the backup. Oh, thank God. But the Telos is great. I mean, they're the professionals, and they know how to do this.
Again, the big thing that we always look at is reliability, and also if we're going to do it over and over again, we're doing it for up to 6 to 7 shows a day for clients. And so I need to be able to just like, you know, we need to be able to turn it over. We need it to work. We need to not have it every time something isn't working, then there's angry calls and everything else. And so for us, that amortizes very quickly over a, you know, not very long period of time to have that work. But I think that, you know, we've done a lot of other things. We've used Skype calls, like had people just call in and be able to jump back and forth. We've even used things like GoToMeeting and free conference
calls. That's not a bad idea. Or Google Hangouts.
Right. So with GoToMeeting or free GoToMeeting, you can give out the number. Everyone's going to call. The problem really is that you don't have everybody muted. So you either have to use a couple different phone calls, you know, phone lines or whatever to do it. But if you're really taking random callers coming in, now if you want to go pre-screen people and say there's 6 people, you might have a couple GoToMeeting or Uber conference call or free conference call. You could have 5 or 6 numbers that they all call. You still have to have those lines to do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And you still have to interface again with that phone. Now, the advantage of using something like GoToMeeting is because you can now use a computer. You can get your audio out. Now, if they all join on their computer and not their phone, then what you can do is you can mute them and unmute them inside of GoToMeeting or some of the other ones. And now you're just doing a USB to analog output. We use a thing called a USB pre, but that's the most reliable, but not the least expensive solution. But there's a lot of ways to get just a headphone jack out for $60 or something like that as well.
Well, and if you're willing, so it really depends on your budget, how much control you want. B&H sells this JK Audio Auto Hybrid. This is the cheapest, simplest way you can do this. This will interface to a regular phone line. It's $200. It will give you the audio. It does a hybrid. So there's two. The other thing about phone calls that you probably never even considered is that you want to. It's not a full duplex connection. In general, you would like only one person could talk at a time. There's two ways to do this. There's a gated system where whoever's loudest wins.
Right.
And you'll sometimes hear talk show hosts use this. If they raise their voice, they'll actually duck the caller out. The caller will disappear.
Right.
Or there's more modern systems called hybrids that use digital switching, and they do it so fast you can't tell it's not full duplex. You can't tell that they're not both talking at once. That's what this is. For $200, that's what's how cheap digital technology has gotten. Now, this is one line. You see, you can pick up the call, you can drop the call, that's about it. But it will give you enough, you know, it'll give you good quality phone from a regular phone line. But in order for that to work, you'd have to schedule the caller. It's really designed for like an interview situation.
Yeah, okay.
So if you
the first one that I would experiment with is the call in studio,
the software solution.
Yeah. Call in studio.
It looks pretty good, doesn't it?
It looks good. We haven't used it. Haven't tested enough to know. But it's but I think that that's where I'd probably experiment first. See if that solves your problem, and then if it doesn't, you maybe need to decide whether you want to invest in some hardware.
We'll have to keep looking.
In between the VX that I was talking about and that
is.
Telos makes smaller versions of that that are a couple $1,000s that take, you still need six analog lines. So you have, you'd get, which are nothing. They're $10 a month. I mean, not nothing, but they're, analog lines now are cheaper because you're not using them for long distance or anything else. So you can get, you don't have to go all the way to $6,000 or $8,000. You can go to these ones that take six analog lines or three analog lines and you can take those as well. So
I'm really surprised. I mean, TalkShoe isn't that complicated. And obviously they weren't able to monetize, and so they really haven't done much. But that's a simple VoIP solution. They're probably running asterisk.
I think it's just demand. I think it's just a matter of how many people need to do it.
Yeah. Or use something like Twilio and cobble some. I think there's digital ways to do it is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can cobble it together. I think the problem is that when you start cobbling it together, you start looking at how much time you're spending on it, and then people just buy the VX.
Right.
It's like, I just want this to go away.
Now, the way we do it is, of course, we have a radio station callover. We have comes in through VoIP. It's a complicated
setup. That's the VX. The VX
setup.
The VX and the VX.
Into the VX. But, you know, that's how real radio stations do it. Yeah. I think now there's this blurring line between podcasts, internet-based radio stations, and real radio stations, and the more professional, you've already got one of the biggest Disney podcasts out there. The more professional, it might be worth it. Do you do advertising? Is that how you support yourself?
Yeah, we do. We have sponsors, and we do make money. We also do Patreon, and we get some Patreon support as well.
So look at this. TalkShoe obviously heard. They've tweeted us. They say the all-new TalkShoe is relaunching this summer at Podcast Movement, which is the big podcast expo.
Well, there you go.
So they just tweeted at us.
Hopefully, if they're listening,
we woke them up.
Yeah. Hopefully, if they're listening right now, they'll send us a beta. Let us test it.
Yeah,
send you a beta. They should get you on their beta test and have you doing it to make sure that it works.
That's hysterical.
That is the way to go. Yeah.
So I'm really glad to hear that they're around because this was the easiest.
It was to do it.
It was just fantastic, and it really worked for us. We really were very happy. We used it for a long time on a lot of. When I logged into my account, which I hadn't done in years, and I blew the digital dust off of it, I saw MacBreak Weekly. We must have used it for MacBreak Weekly. Net at Night, This Week in Tech. We've used it for a number of our shows, and it worked.
It was a great solution. And when we first looked at this question, I was like, TalkShoe is the one that I could. That I was like, that's what we used to use. But I hadn't.
Are they still around? Yeah, they are. Apparently, they're relaunching. We woke them up. Thank you. I appreciate it, Tony.
By the way, another one is the Hangout. You could use something like a Hangout because you can mute everybody and then unmute them. They'll see each other while they're talking, but you can mute them and unmute them so that you can. They have to unmute themselves on a Hangout. You can mute them, but you can't unmute them. So that's always something to pay attention to.
And TalkShoe, since you're watching. If you relaunch, I will use you because I would love to have call-ins on some of our other shows. We used it back when we were audio only. Now we take call-ins like this, which is really cool because we can see your amazing Woody and artwork back there, and we can see the monorail, that beautiful monorail shot. I can see all. This is a nice off. This is your studio.
No, this is my office. We have a whole loft upstairs, which is the studio that we record in each week.
So you're obviously one of those guys who was a Disney fan, to begin with. And when did you decide to do a podcast?
It was about 6 years ago, but the website is probably going on about 10 years. So the website happened, and then I said, well, let's push that forward. And the podcast came from that. I even wrote a book about Disney World as well. So
I know. I remember this. I mean, Disney by the numbers is kind of one of – there are a handful of really big sites for people who are Disney fans.
Yes.
And I'm thrilled that you called in, and congratulations on your success. Let's continue success to you. Keep doing the good work. It's great.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I appreciate everything that you guys do, and you're really the reason I got started in podcasting anyway. So,
is it a full-time gig for you now?
Not yet. I still have a full-time job that kind of pays the mortgage.
Yeah, unfortunately, when we often need to. But, yeah. I hear podcasting is having a renaissance, so...
Yeah, good. I can't wait.
It's great to talk to you, Tony. Take care.
All right, thanks for all your help. I appreciate it.
All right, next time I'm in Orlando, I'll look you up. It'd be fun to
definitely
go through Disney World with the guy who knows
Absolutely.
Disney by the numbers, right? Next week... I'm going to do the same thing with Father Robert at the Vatican, right?
There you go.
He's like Disney by the numbers. He's more like the Pope by the numbers. Father Robert will be here next week, our digital Jesuit. If you've got a question for him, what is in those catacombs underneath the Vatican? Here's how you ask.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
There you go. The great Jim Cutler, he's the voice of This Week in Tech and does all of our voiceover stuff just out of the love of the network, because I couldn't afford Jim. He's like one of the best and best known voiceover artists in the country, does ESPN, many radio stations. He's such a legend. Thank you, Jim. We always have to remember to thank Jim for the great job he does for us. Mailbag coming up in just a bit. But first, I'm very interested in this. There's a new Bluetooth standard in town, Bluetooth 5, and here are the first earbuds to take advantage of it. Jason Howell has this review.
I've been somewhat reluctant to accept the trend of phones ejecting the analog headphone jack because it places more emphasis on Bluetooth as the way that, well, you listen to headphones. And what can I say? I'm a creature of habit. I like the whole direct plug-in approach. I've always done it that way. It's comfortable. My current phone, the Pixel 2 XL, has no headphone jack. Without a dongle, that is, which I've used and forgot many times now, by the way. And I've known that at some point I would need to attempt to step into the modern headphone age, at least see what it's like. The newly released Liberty Plus wireless earphones by Zolo, which is a sub-brand of Anker, caught my eye. I've got them right here. Been giving them a whirl for a little bit now, and I'm happy to report that my time has been well spent. The Liberty Plus earphones are small enough to fit into my ear with no additional wires connecting the two, so you don't have that weird wire stretching from one ear hole to the other. The package actually comes equipped with many pairs of different sized grip fit ear tips and jackets, two separate modifiable components that I kind of had to work a bit to find the right combination to fit my ear, but once I did, the earphone inserts and actually locks into place in the ear canal and stays extremely steady. I could even work out with them and they'd stay in place throughout my workout. Not to mention they're actually IPX5 rated, so they're sweatproof for gym wear. The surface of each earphone actually has this button, and this is for Bluetooth control. One tap will play or pause your music or maybe answer the incoming call, for example. A long tap on either side will either skip forward or back a track, depending on which ear you're tapping. Two taps will summon your assistant of choice. My main beef, though, with the button isn't the functionality, but that it's a mechanical button, which basically means that when you press it, the earphone itself pushes further into your ear canal slightly. And every time you do that, that can get slightly uncomfortable. There's also a mic on these earphones for making calls, and the people on the other end tended to say that my calls sounded fine, not amazing, but what could you expect from a mic that's actually placed near your ear and away from your mouth? These charging contacts allow for easy charging inside the included charging case. You just drop them into place and they kind of snap into place and top off. The earphone battery themselves last around 3 to 4 hours of continuous use. However, the charging case has an additional 48 hours of use that it can pass to the earphones when it's docked, which is awesome in my opinion. You'll always drop them into the case when you're done using them. And in doing so, they get topped off quickly and they're ready for the next wear. The case is a little bit bulky, I'd say, but it fit pretty well inside my pockets. Now, these earphones connect to phones via Bluetooth 5. These are actually one of the first of its kind to use the new standard. Technically, that should mean faster transfer and better range, but it's kind of uncertain how much that applies here. I do know that pairing was an absolute cinch and that I never, not once, experienced an audio dropout or any skipping audio, anything like that, which I've read the previous model that does use Bluetooth 4.2 experience somewhat regularly. And not to mention, I think these sound great. They're maybe a little bit bass heavy, depending on the type of music you're listening to, but you'd have to check them out for yourself and see how they how that applies to your taste. You also want to make sure that you have those ear tips fitting just right, because when they aren't properly matched to your ears, say you have the wrong combination, everything can tend to sound maybe a bit weak, empty on the low end. But I felt like they offer a good amount of isolation. It got plenty loud with minimal distortion at the highest levels from my phone. And let's face it, these don't look nearly as strange in the ear as AirPods do. I realize that's subjective, but you're wrong if you disagree. For $150, the Liberty Plus earphones by Anchor definitely deserve a place in your ear holes. You should try them out for yourself. I'm Jason Howell, and you can find me talking about Android on All About Android and talking about all things tech on Tech News Weekly.
Thank you, Jason Howell. He does a lot of headphone reviews because he's our musician, and so we figure he has the best hearing. I can't remember. I think it was you might have told me about the Jabra Elites, which is what I use, and they seal very well, but they're more expensive. If you can get them, I got them for $150, same price.
Right.
They're very similar. They look very similar, except they do heart rate and stuff like that.
Yep.
You said you're going to wait for the new Apple solution.
Well, I have a lot of headsets, so I don't need. I have the Jabra Elite. I use the Apple AirPods. I have the Braggies that I play with a little bit, but I haven't used them as much recently. And then I have the Edmodics wired ones that I still use because they're great for conference calls.
You were saying they have the best microphone.
They have the best microphone. So all of our producers have.
They have to.
They have That's to. The like deal. Literally, I mail them to them. if you're bad, I spend probably 3 to 4 hours on conference calls a day.
Oh, what a nightmare.
So we're really particular.
Do you walk around and do stuff?
If I can get away with it, yeah. That's why. That's why I don't like video calls, because I'm like, now I'm monotasking.
To chop here. Do you mind?
Yeah. So we're fanatical about conference calls, so we don't, because we're on so many
if
of
you're
them.
You're on a lot of them. I understand.
No speaker phones. Yeah. No shared phones. No. And good headsets.
Mute
when you're not talking.
When you're not.
There's an article on LinkedIn that I wrote that I was just like, I just couldn't take it any longer. I got off of like one of those horrible conference calls, and I was literally like, these are the 10 things that you need to know about doing conference calls.
It's on LinkedIn. I'm going to find it.
Yeah, if you do LinkedIn, it's
I'm going to find it.
There's a whole thing on conference calls.
It's time for the mailbag. Go ahead, Colleen. Shove that. Did we get a new knob? Is that new? I don't remember that being so bright green. Maybe the other one fell off. All right. Oh, this is for you, Alex. Here you go.
Hello. I can't hear anybody. Hello.
They like to stick stuff in our mailbag.
Hello.
Is that from my radio station? Yeah, it is. Yeah, all right. Here, would you stop talking and take that? So funny, because every cell phone in the world, the icon for the phone is that, right?
Right.
For Android and iOS, that's that. Do kids even know? Have they seen anything like that? Do they know what that is? The handset?
My kids don't know what CDs are.
Here, pick up the handset and dial the phone. What? You must be an old guy. They don't know what CDs are. No, of course not. I went to I went to the CD store with Henry 10 years ago, and I said, I got to get some records. He said, what's a record?
I went in. There's a little one down here, a little record store.
Really?
And I came in, and I felt bad. I walked in, and the guy goes, hey, are you looking for anything? And I was with my son, and I said, it was the worst thing to say. I just wanted him to see these. You know, like, I just wanted him to see it. And he's like, oh, really?
Come on, man.
Like, that's not even cool. And I was like, I'm sorry. It really was. And it still smelled like old records. It was great. But
You worked in a record store, right?
I worked in radio, and I promoted. I was at record stores all the time. I worked for Sony, to record store.
Here's something that will never happen again. I used to work in a record store, part one.
Right.
With vinyl records.
Oh, yeah.
But you would get every week an update. There was a big book.
Yeah.
I mean, big. It had a special table and thousands of pages that had every piece of music in print, every record made. And you would get updates to this. And one of my jobs in the record store was every week, I'd have to open it up and take out
records that are gone and put in the new records so that the it was called Phonolog, and that had every record in print. So when somebody came into the record store, you could go, oh, let me see. I think we, the Tony Orlando and Don, it's right there. You could do that now, like in database, 3 seconds, update it automatically. Crying out loud.
Just, you find it on your phone, just says, antiquated. Is this available?
Antiquated.
Yeah. Yeah, it moves fast.
Now you hold up your phone, it tells you what the name of the song is, gives you the lyrics.
and puts it on your Spotify
playlist. Puts it on your Spotify playlist. Email number one, it's yours, sir.
Leo and friends.
they didn't know you were going to be here.
Yeah, I guess I'm a friend. I just have a simple question. What microphone do you use and recommend for podcasting? I would appreciate your advice on this. Thank you, Carmen.
Oh, Carmen, you got the friend. This is the guy. He knows more about microphones. You're the king of microphones. But let me just say what I use, then you can say I'm wrong. So as you probably have noticed, if you watch any of our shows, we don't on this show because we walk around a lot, so we're using these what they call lavalier or lapel mics. But for everything else where we're sitting at a table, we use something from my friend Bob Heil, who's the host of our Ham Nation show, is the king of sound men. He's the guy. I'll tell you how good Bob Heil is. He's the guy that The Who called when Pete Townsend said, you know, we would like a way for the music to go all around in the concert, all around. And he invented the quadraphonic sound that became quadraphenia for The Who. When Peter Frampton's wife, Peter Frampton, remember him? His wife came to Bob and said, I want a special gift for Peter. And Bob built this thing you put in your mouth and you play the guitar and it goes wah, 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 wah. And became, of course, one of the best-selling albums of all time.
It's fun. Anytime you see him, you he tells you some crazy story.
He's amazing.
He's fixing some issue for somebody, and it's always like, oh.
The sound guy.
Yeah.
So he was also a ham, and that's why he hosts our ham show. And he hated the state-of-the-art and ham microphones. So he said, you know, I could make a better microphone. And he created this. This is from Heil Sound, H-E-I-L. It's the PR40. I discovered this when I won one in the first podcast expo for best podcast of the year. They gave me this, and I talked into it like that, and I went, oh, I think I'm in love. It was the best microphone for my voice anyway. It is a large coil dynamic mic, which is nice because it's not sensitive. So a lot of times you'll see radio stations and recording studios use condenser mics like the Neumann, the $1,000, $2,000 Neumann mics. They pick up a pin dropping. They pick up every sound. And that's why when you record a record, you're in a soundproof booth far away from anybody else. So it just hears your voice. You can hear lip smacking and stuff. That's not what you want for podcasting because you don't do podcasting in a soundproof booth. You do it in a normal place. I do our shows in normal places, even the radio show. So I like this mic. It has good off-axis rejection, doesn't hear sound, doesn't pick up noise from the rest of the room, and it's fairly cheap. I think, look at that, $327 MSRP at Heil Sound. Now, there is a similar, even less expensive, large coil dynamic mic that it's kind of a classic made by Shure called the SM58, used by punk rockers everywhere because you can bang on it.
It has been out, I think, in the 50s or 60s.
It's been out forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it sounds very, and it's $120, $150 bucks. Yep. It's not bad. It's about half the price of this. And it sounds almost every bit as good. So if you can't afford a Heil PR40, that's really the best sound of all, especially for male voices. And if you can't afford that SM58, it's indestructible, gives you great sound, and is not picky.
Yep.
Now, what do you think?
So, I agree. So, most of my podcasting has been the PR40. Mm-hmm. Same thing. SM58, we have probably 20 or 30 of them at the office. We just use them for... I just need a mic. You know, right. I need a mic, and it's going to sound reasonably good. You get up there, you get a little too close, you're going to get a lot of proximity, but it's still good.
So it gives you a big bass.
If you want to get close to it.
Bad.
So, and yeah, it's good. It's good. And both of them have really good, as you said, off-axis rejection. You're going to be able to move away from that mic. You're not going to pick up the whole room. You're not going to hear as much echo. Those are all great things.
But you do have to work them. So you have to tell people, get close to that mic, closer than you think.
There it is. She's not sure.
What are you not sure about?
It was
talking to us?
Yeah.
I hate you. No, I love you. So the one problem is that you have to have fairly good mic technique, and you'll see singers sometimes back off when they're loud.
And they're really good. They'll know exactly how to do it, but you need to know how to do it.
You have to know how to do it.
That you're going
to
pull away. What's nice, if you need to cough, you just literally lean away and cough and come back, and you're really not going to hear it. The The other ones that are more USB driven. So one of the things about both of these mics that we talked about is you're still going to need a USB interface. So you're going to have you have XLR out of these mics
because that's Bob Heil. OMG, that's historic.
That's great.
That's Bob when in his hippie days, I guess. Oh my God! And by the way, notice the microphone that is right up next to that speaker there. That's an SM58.
So the one thing about those is you're going to still need an audio interface to get those into your computer if you're doing podcasting. If you're recording to something external, that's fine. But
that's a very good point.
So both of those have to be converted. Now, the way I deal with that on the road is I'll either use, I can't remember it now, Audio Technica makes one that's very similar to the form factor of
the 2010. ATR 2010.
Is that it? It's the same as the PR40. Very close as far as how
it
looks.
But it has a USB interface.
It has a USB interface on the back of it, so you just plug that in, and now it's going to go straight into your computer. The one I like better from just a travel perspective is the Shure, and I believe it's the M44 or the MX44, and it's the, you know, it's part of that whole.
They're called the Motif line.
The Motif 44. But it's a 44, and it's a little. It looks like a 50s mic. And it's got, what's cool about it is on the back, you can either set it on something, and it's got a little rubber stopper, but it also, you can unscrew that, and you've got a little mic stand. Yeah. And I carry literally like a little mic stand in my backpack with that mic on it, and I can just pop it up and talk to it, you know, and talk into it. I think the sound is okay. I've used it for a lot of Mac breaks. I think that the sound is reasonably good for something, and I think it's that expensive. I think it's
they're not bad.
$60, $70, $80.
And they have one advantage the Motif line has is a lot of them have lightning connectors. So if you want to record to an iPad or an iPhone, that's a nice feature. Now, there's a company called Blue that makes professional microphones that are very cool looking.
The Yetis are great.
They make a number of USB microphones. In fact, I think the Yeti is probably the most popular for podcasters. I'm not a huge fan of the Yeti. It's a condenser mic.
Right.
I think that makes it a little bit oversensitive. It's not as good for the off-axis rejection. It also needs to be used properly. A lot of podcasters speak into the wrong end of their Yetis.
Right.
So read the instructions if you get one. Blue makes a whole series. There's their lower-cost ones like the Raspberry and the there's one called the Snowball.
Don't get the Snowball.
Don't get the Snowball. It has no head end. I think the Yeti's pretty good. It's just bulky and big.
And then on the high end, of course, I do for voiceovers, I do have a Neumann.
Everybody, but you'd have to have a sound booth.
I have a pretty good room.
So that's if somebody has a really beautiful voice and you want to get every bit of it, you do that. But you have to have a soundproof booth. You have to really have a controlled environment. But that's why singers, professionals, they'll use the Neumann.
It's a whole different level.
It is very accurate.
But it is a very expensive mic to have for
thousands.
Yeah. Mine isn't thousands, but it's still.
Not for podcasting.
Not for podcasting. No, it's not worth it.
You want something robust. I would start with the SM58. And then Shure makes the Icicle, which is an adapter you can put on the SM58 to make it a USB microphone. That's not too expensive.
Yeah, that or the. And I like, as I said, I really like the Motif as far as something that is a good.
Good stuff.
Good. Yeah, I think that one works out pretty well as well.
Well, we've over answered that question. Why don't you do. I have question two.
All
we crushed it. That's the way to say it. Adam writes, hello, I loved your travel gadget episode with Father Palliser, and I'm looking for your recommendation for the ultimate geek travel bag.
Now, the big question there is it a carry-on or your backpack? Let me grab mine. I'll show you what mine is.
Okay. Alex is going to go grab his.
Where's my backpack?
I have a big problem. I have a bag fetish. So I have purchased over the last few years several dozen bags. John has inherited many of them. and I have yet to find the perfect travel bag. So I'm going to watch with great interest. The nice thing about a backpack is you can carry it on your back. You could carry a lot more weight than you would with a sling bag or a handbag because your back, you're a Sherpa. But I'm not sure I want to carry all that stuff around.
I just am unable to get to a small amount of things that I want to carry around on a day-to-day basis. And so anything that slings over just gives me back problems and shoulder problems. And so I always...
You like to wear a backpack.
From a backpack. Now, what I'm using right now for my travel, my carry-on, is the Away bag.
The Away is cool because it has a battery built into it.
The problem with the battery is you got to get the newer one. So I bought it when they first got it. I was like, I got to have
one. They
were
a sponsor,
You now have to unscrew it and everything else.
The FAA is requiring people to take the batteries.
United doesn't, but everybody else does. So you always worry that eventually United is going to take my bag away. And I carry it on most of the time, so it doesn't matter. But But anyway, but the new ones, you can just push them down and pop them out, pop out the battery, put it in your backpack. Yeah. They're much better that way. I really like it. My big thing about carry-on bags is I like them to be very, I like them to be hard and be exactly 9 by 14 by 22 because that is the that's the typical requirement for a domestic flight. And it means that it'll fit into almost every overhead. And so that I always get them so that they're hard cases. It's kind of like a 1510, the other one that I really
the
like.
Pelican 1510.
Pelican makes
that, which is the classic. But boy, that is bulky and big. And
they make a consumer version of that.
They do.
That's like the Airweight or whatever, and it's really nice, but it is expensive. Yeah. And it doesn't have a battery like the Away one does. Right. And the Away one is really, really light. So for a backpack, I have to admit, this is...
This weighs more than his Away bag.
Yes, it does. It's so funny because like Lufthansa will take my bag... mid-flight or whatever, because they think it's too heavy, they'll take my other one. And I just quietly just go, you have no idea.
Don't
you're talking about weight. Anyway, so this is a Rush 24 from a Tactical 511.
You've talked about Tactical. And so, like this, that you actually has your name on a Velcro patch.
You could print these.
Didn't you have one that said FBI?
No, I don't have
that
FBI.
That wasn't you.
No, that wasn't me. So these little things, you can print them on Amazon now. Like, you can literally go to Amazon and
print a Velcro badge.
And print a Velcro badge. And so they pop on here. We got our little logo on there.
That's actually nice. I like that.
We put them on the handles because we kept on picking them up because everybody in the company has a Rush 24. So you print it out there. What I like about this...
I have a desire for your bag.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, the...
What makes this a great travel bag?
So one of the things that makes it a great travel bag is a lot of pockets. And so, and there's pockets inside a pocket. So when you open up, I've got a pocket in here, lots of zipped pockets. So you can keep a lot of stuff in here. I've got little, pockets in here. Here's my little Ear Heroes. So you can put stuff in here.
Get one of these.
And then you have, on the other side, I've got the same thing. And then when I open it up, what's nice is I usually pop it open, and I want to open it up like this.
I kind of like bags that will open up fully, like a clamshell, so you can really get in there.
If you're afraid it's going to open up, you can also...
You have straps.
You have straps here that you can kind of lock in.
Could you use this for cameras, or would you prefer not to?
I put cameras in it.
Okay.
But usually the cameras are in their cases. But what's nice is I got a lower bag here. This carries my little my little DJI.
How heavy is this thing?
It's heavy.
You're a crazy man, Alex Lindsay.
Anyway, and then I have my little. See, everybody's got to have a 10.
You should always USB, carry a USB port, USB
10 port, 10 USB port charger.
That's the IQ.
That's the new one.
That's nice.
Got a couple iPads. And then you have like the emergency. You have the little emergency stick down here with a couple extra cables, and then you have all your. And I kind of keep my cables. Here's my nice little battery.
Oh, wow.
And then you got a front one. You start really organizing everything, so I keep my heart, my little SSD drives.
This
in
is
here.
What I find I like to do is use the same pockets and have a category.
Yeah, you know what you're
so
doing.
So that I know what I'm gonna where I can find the headphones right away.
I always keep everything
same place
in the same place. And then what's
this
nice
has a lot of straps.
Yeah. Well,
they're all functional or some of them are just for show.
No, so this is the reason that I have this is number one is you can grab it under your
seat and pull it out.
And then the other thing I can do is I can take a tripod and slide it down there and latch it. That's why I have so many of these. I found if I had less of them it would move around a lot.
Go to Tactical 511, do you design this or is this a standard?
No, this is just what they send you.
Standard issue.
This is where I keep my short charger cables.
Do you have a place for your long charger cables?
Yeah, that's where this is. This is the long charger cables up here.
Of course,
all of the long charger cables, almost all of them are all cloth because I'm into braided cloth.
Cloth is better.
Is the only way to go.
Then
there's a. This one, it's actually for water, but I use it for...
Are you on the Spectrum?
This is...
No.
Spectrum?
What is that?
This is my Wacom tablet.
Oh, of course.
So so it goes in here. And the big thing is that a lot of times if I'm only going for a day trip, I'll keep a set of skivvies.
How do you get this printed on there? This is...
It's a company called BDU. Colleen might know. Colleen knows because I think she ordered them. Yeah, so anyway...
Can you help me get one for myself?
Yeah, so
I might be buying one of these bags. Tactical 511, is it like $300?
No, that's the best part. It's like $80 or $90. It's not expensive bag.
And you can get it in
camo. I think it's $80 or $90. You can get it in camo.
$90. Maybe I was wrong. $85 to $130.
Yeah, and you can
which do you have? Is you have the Rush 24?
I have the Rush 24. A third of our company uses the Rush 12. A lot of people have gone for the little one. I think that's a waste of space. And then there's a Rush 72.
They
will not let you take the Rush 72 and put it in the overhead. That's much bigger than...
It's too big.
It's too big.
You can't.
It's good if you're going camping.
Yeah.
It's...
Those are not so expensive.
No, they're not very expensive. I mean, in the bag world, they have a lot of bags. I have a lot of their bags, but this is the one that I use on a day-to-day basis.
So your recommendation?
My kids have Rush 12s.
Okay.
So that with Lindsay on them and
did you get the Rush tier system for all those straps, or does it come with those?
You can
straps?
Order the straps separately.
Yes, and I see that.
I just order them. I order them separately for that. And then I have little. I have these little hooks here, so you can hook stuff to them if you need to.
Does that come with that, or
no,
do you have to
buy those separately too?
Some hooks purchased separately.
But here's the thing: is that this bag. The other thing I'll say is
it looks like it's been through the mill.
It has been on every continent except Antarctica.
Wow!
I've had it for probably I think 4 or 5 years, and it's the same bag. It's not like I got another one that was like it. So they are. And when I say super durable,
You beat this
been
thing
in Africa.
Up.
I've been in Iraq. Yeah, I've been in
really
Cambodia
nice.
With it. It is really great. And you can on the inside. The only thing I don't like is that it doesn't have any neoprene at the bottom. I keep on planning to put some in, just so that your laptop when it's sitting in there isn't hitting the ground hard.
Right.
Although I have my laptop in a case anyway, so it's not.
No, but it does need that. Yeah. Very nice. Tactical 511. They make good stuff. I know Andy Anatko is a big fan as well.
Yeah.
There's the answer. That's the definitive answer. Thank you so much, Alex. It's always a pleasure. I did not expect to see you today, and I'm so glad I did.
It was fun.
Thank you for coming up. Always fun. You'll find more of Alex's stuff at pixelcore.com. You can now follow them on Patreon and be part of the Pixel Core.
We're teaching people how to learn how to do what we do.
That's really
great. We need more people. So our soft way of doing having more people is to come start to train them. So we're gonna be ramping that up. We're actually gonna do another Q&A session with Fred about LiDAR.
Oh, good.
In the next week or two, and we're also talking about live video and answering questions. And so hopefully people will come and join us.
Just search for patreon.com/pixelcore.
That's correct.
You can also, of course, follow Alex on Twitter. He's always announcing interesting and new things, sometimes live streams and so forth. His Twitter handle is AlexLindsay, at Alex Lindsay. Mm-hmm. Make sure you follow him and check out what's going on in the Pixel Core. I'm really glad that you've opened that up to the public. That's really fantastic. We are here every Saturday afternoon to the Noon and Screensavers. Every Saturday about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Our clocks jump forward tomorrow, which means... yes, I know, we're springing ahead. So that means we're going to record the show from your point of view an hour earlier until summertime happens where you are. So probably the easiest way for me to say this is we'll be at 2200 UTC, and you just figure out what that means for you in your area. If you want to watch live, go to twit.tv/live. If you do that, please join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. You can be part of the group that's catcalling us from behind the scenes. It's a lot of fun. It's a great chat room. If you can't watch live, we make on-demand audio and video available of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. In the case of this show, it's twit.tv/NSS. Please subscribe, though. And you can do that from our website or just whatever you get your podcasts with, whether it's Pocket Cast or iTunes or Stitcher or Overcast or Slack or whatever it is. We're there. Make sure you find the new screensavers and subscribe. That way you'll get every single episode as it comes out. If you want to subscribe to our newsletter, that's also at the website, twit.tv/newsletter. Give you a look ahead at what's coming up on the Twit Network. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on the new screensavers. Bye-bye.